technically it comes after you take either your vow to think like a bodhisattva, commitment to think like a bodhisattva, or after you take your commitment to keep all 64 bodhisattva vows, etc. And that's called, the subject tonight is called Temba and Shishin. I'll write it for you. Say Temba. Shishin. Temba. Shishin. Okay. This is after you have taken your vows and after you've made your commitments, then this is how to keep them. Okay. And it's two states of mind that you have to have as you walk around New York City. Okay. Temba is hard to translate. We're going to call it recollection, okay? Recollection. In the sense of awareness, like an awareness of what you're doing at any given time. And then Shishin is more like a watchfulness, okay? And we're going to talk about the difference. These are two states of mind you have to have if you're going to keep your commitment to think like a bodhisattva and act like a bodhisattva. And I think we can compare it to the function of these two in meditation. If you studied the, what course was it? Third course on meditation. These two are very important. Temba is the antidote for the very first problem of meditation. The first problem of meditation is what? Do you remember? Laziness. That's not temba. Okay, so what's the second problem? Huh? Forgetting the object, okay? Like, temba is where you just lose the object altogether. I'm sorry. Forgetfulness, right? Jenge. It's called jenge, okay? I just got back from 4 days of teaching, like, 10 minutes ago, so please excuse. Anyway, Shishin is... Jenge is forgetting the object altogether, okay? Like, you're meditating on something, and suddenly you realize that you're thinking about something altogether different, okay? There's other mental functions where you're just losing the object slightly from time to time. Like, you're meditating pretty well for like 5 minutes, then the object starts to get fuzzy, or you blank out for a second and you come back to the object. Jenge is in meditation, the opposite of Demba, is where you just go off on another tangent, and you know you've done it. I do it all the time. Okay, so you're trying to meditate on a certain object, and then after a certain amount of time, you just realize that it's not in your mind anymore at all. And you've just had a long distraction about what you were going to do at work today, or what you were going to eat for breakfast, or something like that. Okay, Temba is the opposite of that. Temba holds, its definition is holding a virtuous object in the mind without losing it. And its definition comes later in the text. It won't come in your reading. In fact, nothing will come in your reading because we didn't finish the reading. So you have to pay special attention tonight because you're not going to get a reading for all this, okay? We're just behind. It takes like, we calculated 80 hours to finish all the readings and we just couldn't do it. So hopefully we'll have it ready by Thursday. If there's 3 days between now and Thursday. Anyway, so Jemba is that. Jemba keeps your mind on what you're doing in meditation. In your day-to-day life, and especially for a bodhisattva, it means you focus on an object, you focus your life on some object, you focus your practice on some object, and then as you're walking around New York, you don't lose it. You don't forget the goal for which you are living. Okay? And Master Shantideva gives two examples. In the text prior to here, he talks about Sangye Jeden. Say Jeden? Jeden? Jeden is called, sometimes it's translated as recollection of the three jewels. And that's one kind of recollection. And since he mentions it, we'll go into that for a bit. I think some of you have been studying that sutra that it comes from. And I've heard it explained two ways. Like, how do you recollect the three jewels? Okay, what are the three jewels and what does it mean to recollect them? It's actually also part of your refuge commitment. If you've taken refuge, if you're in this room and if you're a Buddhist, six times a day you're supposed to be jadening, the three jewels, okay? You're supposed to be recollecting them. Okay, you're supposed to be thinking about them six times a day, three times in the daylight, three times at night. And what does it mean to recollect them? Well, for example, for the Buddha jewel, okay, Jeden, which means recollecting them, and it's related to this Jemba, is mainly to think about their qualities, okay? Mainly to think about what a Buddha is like. And I think if you're like me, especially in my early years in Buddhism, when you Jeden the Buddha, when somebody says, recollect the Buddha, what do you think of when you think of Buddha? You think of this guy with long ears and a bump on his head and somebody totally out of our league, you know, totally irrelevant almost to us. You know, he started this religion 2,500 years ago and then he sort of disappeared. And since then it's been in the hands of these lamas. And we mostly think of our lamas. But what does it mean to recollect the Buddha? I mean, are you supposed to try to think of this exotic guy who's just totally different than us and who lived in ancient India and doesn't seem to have much relevance to us? You know, what does it mean to recollect the Buddha? I think it's important to recollect the two bodies, okay? So when you're walking around New York and you're trying to recollect the Buddha jewel, what are the three jewels? Recollect the two bodies. Okay, what are the two bodies? There's the mental, phenomenal body, you know, like, we'll get into that. And then there's the physical bodies. Let's start with the physical bodies since they're easier. Okay, Buddha has two kinds of physical bodies. And you have to think of it from time to time. One kind of mindfulness or awareness as you walk around New York City is not to forget what your goal is. You know, what are you trying to do? What is the goal of Buddhism itself? Why are you going to class? And you see a lot of classes in Buddhism that pretty much boil down to, I saw an advertisement recently, you know, it was learn Buddhism, learn to be calm, learn to stop stress in your life. You know, something like that. Be calm and stop stress in your life, or something like that. That's too small of a goal, okay? I mean, the thing that we're trying to stop in Buddhism is Kega Na Chi. Say, Kega Na Chi. Kega Na Chi. And none of those are stress, okay? What are they? I mean, the four things we're trying to stop when we become a Buddhist. And Kewa means having to take birth in a body like this, a body and a mind like this. Okay, anything wrong with this body and mind? I mean, it's pretty good if, as long as you're practicing and you know you've met a lama and everything's going pretty well, it's not so bad. But the point is where this body will go. The body has nowhere to go but old. Okay, it has no other, because of the forces which have created it and thrown it into motion. Those forces, as they wear out, will cause the body to get old. The body, when it's born, Buddhism says that things are made to self-destruct. That there's no object, in your normal world which is not made to self-destruct. When it's made, it will self-destruct. There's this big debate about does it take an external force to destroy your body, and the answer is no. I mean, if a car doesn't hit you, or you don't get AIDS or something like that, the body itself will kill the body. When the body is born, it's built to self-destruct. And that's the same for all objects in our lives, okay? Your house, your car, your husband or wife, your children, your parents, your friends, your job. Everything when it begins has in it a self-destruct button that goes off automatically. And they will always self-destruct. They will always do that. Okay. Buddha's body is created by something else. Buddha's body is created by, we don't call it even created by karma. We call it created by the two collections. When you get to the end of the class and you do your dedication, you're praying that everybody will get the two collections and that they will get the two bodies from those two collections. And so the Buddha's body is not like that. It doesn't have ke. It isn't born with a body like this. It doesn't have ga. Ga means getting old. It doesn't have na, it won't get sick. And chi, it doesn't have death. Okay? And stress is not in there. Those are the four things that Buddhism is supposed to do for you. It's supposed to stop you getting this kind of body. It's supposed to stop you from getting old. It's supposed to stop you from getting sick and stop you from dying. And stress and not being calm are not in there. Okay? That's a minimum goal of Buddhism. So what you're thinking about is that the Buddha has this quality. The Buddha's body is different. And when you recollect the Buddha, you think about that body. The body in the Buddha's own paradise doesn't have those qualities. It was not born by this energy called mental afflictions, okay, or karma. It is not going to get old, and it's not going to get sick, and it will never die the way our bodies die. And that's the first thing. When you think of the Buddha, think of this body in a Buddha paradise that you have to try to reach in this life, okay, before you die. Kiganachi. Second kind of body that the Buddha has is the one that 1 millisecond after the Buddha's enlightenment, what? You guys had it in where? Philadelphia? Yeah. You don't have this body the first millisecond of your enlightenment. Like the first millisecond of your enlightenment, you're deficient. You only have half of the physical bodies of the Buddha. Which one is missing? Huh? You can say Nirmanakaya. Nirmanakaya means the body that you send out to other planets, okay? The bodies that go help people. All right, and you don't have one the first millisecond of your enlightenment because you have, it takes, you are completing the ability to send out that body, and then in the second millisecond you send them out. It doesn't take any premeditation. It's called Hundrup. Hundrup means you don't have to think, oh, it's like 4 o'clock, I have to go to Earth right now. Okay, your body just shows up on every planet where somebody is ready to benefit from that. That Buddha's body that you see with the unusual head and the long ears and the special marks, that's called the classic Nirmanakaya. That's the one that comes once on this planet, 500 BC in our times, shows up and has these special marks. It has 112 special marks. Then there's the unclassic Nirmanakayas, which can be anything. They can be they can look like anybody you know, okay? I mean, anybody in this room could be a Nirmanakaya. We don't know. Okay, I don't know, all right? It's possible that half the people or three of the people or everybody in this room except me is a Nirmanakaya, okay? A Buddha's body. And if someone is ready and ripe and all the causes are there, then they can see this person, and this person can help them. Okay, the moment you achieve enlightenment, 1 millisecond later, you are able to appear in trillions and trillions of worlds, in trillions and trillions of forms. And you can also appear as a physical object, like the wind or the ocean or something like that. You have this ability. A Buddha has this ability. Okay, so that's when you think of the... What is Shantideva talking about? In these lines today, he's talking about Tremba. One half of Tremba means keeping your mind on the ultimate goal, the three jewels. What is the three jewels as far as the Buddha? As you walk through Manhattan, you have to keep your mind on the fact that I'm going for that. I would like to become that. That's really why I'm here. You know, I'm walking through Manhattan because it has some connection with me having to get these two bodies. Okay, one body in a paradise. Totally fantastic, beautiful, no death. They don't have guts. They don't have insides like we have. In fact, they're not made of atoms in the sense of normal physical matter. They have colors, they have shapes, but they don't have atoms or molecules the way we do. Okay. And then you have to keep your mind on your second goal, which is that I would like to be able, in my lifetime, to serve people in that way. I would like to be able to become a being who can appear on trillions of planets at one moment. And that's Tremba. So as you walk around, I mean, your refuge vows require you to think of it 6 times a day. Master Shantideva is saying, as you walk around New York, think about it. Okay, that's the recollection of the first jewel. Okay, second, what we call the close recollection. Second close recollection is the Dharma. Okay, and Dharma just means... By the way, I should tell you one more body of the Buddha, okay? I didn't cover the mental body, right? What they call the mental body, or the mental element of a Buddha, is the ability to know all things in all times, in all places. So the Buddha knows every object that ever was, is, or will be simultaneously. In one moment, in the first moment of your enlightenment, you have the ability to perceive everything that ever existed, everything that will exist or does exist, everywhere in the universe at one moment. Okay? Very useful for teaching people. Okay? Because you can see their future 1,000 years from now, 1,000,000 years from now. You can see the exact effects of anything you say on them before you say it. Okay? And that's very useful for teaching people. And very useful for helping people. And you have to imagine that you could reach this point. Then there's the emptiness body of the Buddha. Okay? The Dharmakaya in the sense of the emptiness of the Buddha. And that's the emptiness of the Buddha's mind. When Drolungpa, Geshe Drolungpa, who wrote the Tenrim Chamo, which we found through the computer project, this is the greatest book written by the Kadampas, 1,000 pages. And Jetsun Kapa discovered it in his time and used it to write the greatest book ever written in Tibetan, which is the Lamrim Chamo. Anyway, Geshe Drolungpa says, this is the essence of the Buddha jewel, is the emptiness of the Buddha. He says when you take refuge or when you recollect the Buddha and you're trying to think of the Buddha's great qualities, think of the Buddha's emptiness. And there are a lot of reasons why. One reason is on the path of seeing, when you see emptiness directly for the first time and when you come out, the direct perception lasts 20, 30 minutes. When you come out, you're aware that you have met the Dharmakaya, in the sense, you have met a Buddha in the sense that you have met the emptiness of the Buddha. And that's important. That's a very important emptiness at that moment. Also, the emptiness of a Buddha allows him to be a Buddha. Why? If the Buddha wasn't empty, could the Buddha be a Buddha? Huh? Yeah, if the Buddha was self-existent, then there wouldn't be any place for his good karma or his good two collections to perceive him as being a Buddha. Okay. In other words, emptiness is like a blank screen. And if the Buddha didn't have any emptiness, then the Buddha's mind couldn't be forced to see the Buddha as a Buddha. Because the Buddha would be still a plain guy from before. Because he couldn't have become a Buddha because he didn't have any emptiness. Okay. It's the most important emptiness of all. This is by the way, this is what they call Buddha nature. This is the part of you now, that you have now, which can become a Buddha. The emptiness of your own mind is Buddha nature. And that's what allows you to become a Buddha. Okay, does it mean that there's some Buddha hiding inside of you, and if you could get some really good Ajax, you could clean off and find this Buddha? You know, I mean, people explain it like that. It's wrong. Buddha nature means your mind has its own emptiness. Because of that, things are blank. Especially your own mind. Your own mind is blank. Okay, which means that if you had very, very good karma, you could look at your own mind and see what? Omniscience. Okay? And if you had medium karma, you could look at your mind and see a human's mind. And if you had very lousy karma, you could look at your mind and see a bug's mind. Your mind doesn't have any nature of being a bug's mind, human mind, or an omniscient being's mind at all. It doesn't have a nature of any of those three. It can be any of the above depending on your projections, which are forced on you by your past karma. So if your mind wasn't empty, it couldn't be any of those three, and you couldn't move from one to the other. Okay? When you go from bug's mind to human mind to enlightened mind, it's allowed by the emptiness of your mind. Okay? There's an emptiness of your mind, and your own karma is forcing you to see either bug's mind, human mind, or enlightened mind. And which one you see is up to you. Okay? It's up to your karma. Okay? It's up to what deeds you do now. In the future, what you see depends on what deeds you do now. What's deciding now what kind of mind you see? your deeds from the past, okay? You happen to have karma to see your mind as a human right now. It could change in 5 minutes. If you had a heart attack and died here now and went into the bardo, the karma changed. Did you go into the bardo? This is the kind of question, you know, they ask in the Diamond Cutter or in the Heart Sutra. Did your mind go into the bardo? No. Your perception shifted. Okay? Your karma changed, your mind changed, and you're seeing something different. You didn't go into the bardo. Did you go? But did you go into the bardo? Yes. Okay. But if you say it this way, did anybody go into the bardo? No. Did you go into the bardo? Yes. Okay. Did anybody go into the bardo means, did anybody go into the bardo self-existently? Okay. Is there some bardo somewhere and you died and went there? No. Okay. Your mind shifted. Your perception of your own mind shifted. Okay, it's very hard to get a self-existent human into a self-existent bardo. In fact, it's impossible. Okay, because there is no such thing. There's no such thing as a self-existent human, and there's no such thing as a self-existent bardo. Okay, but if the nature of the human is that it's a projection or it's a perception forced on us by our past karma, and if the nature of the bardo is the same thing, well, then you can go from one condition, human mind, into a bardo mind in how long? Yes, people say, I think I've been misquoted. Okay, it's not 64, it's 65. You have to add one, okay? I found it in a scripture recently, okay? This has 65 milliseconds in it, okay? 65 milliseconds in there. During any one of those, your mind can go from human mind to bardo mind. Did any mind go from human mind to bardo mind? No, okay? Perceptions shifted. Okay, if it was self-existent, if it took a self-existent mind to go from human mind to bardo mind, it would take a long time. It'd be very hard to do. It would be the way you feel it in your heart, because your heart has self-existence written all over it. Okay, but if it were not self-existent, and if everything depended on your projections, then you could go from a human mind to a bardo mind 65 times during a finger snap. Okay, because it's just one shift in your perceptions. Therefore, the Dhammakaya of the Buddha is important. Okay? The emptiness of the Buddha's mind is important. The emptiness of your mind is important. Okay, until you become a Buddha, that's called your Buddha nature. The emptiness of your own mind. Why? Is there anything Buddha about you right now? Is there anything about you now which will be the same when you become enlightened? Will your mind or body, will any detail of your mind or body be the same when you reach enlightenment? No. Huh? No. Everything changes. You're totally different. But the emptiness of your mind doesn't change. Okay? That's one thing you can take with you. That's one thing about you which is pretty cool already. All right? And that's why they say Buddha nature. Okay? You will have that emptiness of your mind there. You better have it, because if you didn't have it, you couldn't perceive your mind as omniscient at that moment. Okay? You better have emptiness of your mind, or your mind could never go from human to enlightened mind. So the Dharmakaya of the Buddha, says Geshe Drolungpa, which is where we started from, is very, very important, very critical. That's the main refuge. That's the main Buddha. When you remember or when you recollect the Buddha, think of the emptiness of the Buddha's mind. This is the coolest part of the Buddha, because we have it too. And because of that, we can become a Buddha. So he says that's the main jewel. Yeah. It's true in one sense, in that if I just leave it general and say the emptiness of your mind, then that you can take with you all the way up to Buddhahood. But if I say the emptiness of your current samsaric mind, if I add samsaric, then I can't call it Buddha nature. See, that's a little touchy. All emptinesses, all objects have emptiness. The emptinesses of every object are totally equivalent, except for one detail, which is the thing that they're attached to. Okay? Like the emptiness of the chair and the emptiness of this building are separate only from one point of view, in that they belong to different objects. But their emptiness is pure emptiness. And they're totally equivalent, like pieces of a diamond after you smash it. And that's the one of the reasons of calling, you know, a diamond an example for emptiness. Okay? So that's when you recollect the Buddha as you walk down the street, one of the important things you might want to recollect is what then? Your future Dharmakaya, which is hanging on you right now as the emptiness of your mind. If your mind was not, if your mind did not have emptiness, you couldn't become a Buddha. You never would become a Buddha. So it's a very important emptiness. It's a very important part of you. Okay. Now, how about Dharma Jewel? Okay, Dharma Jewel. The most important one is the direct perception of emptiness. Okay. When you walk down the street and recollect the Dharma Jewel, or you think of the Dharma Jewel, you have to think of the direct perception of emptiness mainly. Okay. Mainly. In the function of refuge, when you take refuge, only the direct perception of emptiness can really help you. Okay? When you're talking about something that can help you or protect you, it's the direct perception of emptiness that can protect you. After you reach the direct perception of emptiness, what's Len Dumbawa mean? Do you remember? Len Dumbawa? Len Dumbawa? No? What's Nandimbawa? Seven timer. You heard of two timers, okay? This is a seven timer. Seven timer means someone who has seven births to go before they become a Buddha, all right? And this is very typical on the day you see emptiness. You realize that you have seven births to go, and that's called a Nandimbawa, okay? In other words, ultimate protection, ultimate Dharma jewel is the direct perception of emptiness. Because only at that moment do you know directly yourself how many lifetimes you have to go. And you see them, okay, on that day. And that's the Dharma jewel. So as you walk around New York and recollect the goal that you're studying for, the goal that you're trying to reach, one of the most important ones is to remember the quality of seeing emptiness directly. Okay. Now the third jewel, okay, a Sangha jewel. How do you have a close recollection of the Dharma jewel? What is the ultimate, Sangha jewel? What is the Sangha? It's Arya, okay? I mean, nominally, it's anybody who's wearing a red suit, except Santa Claus. Okay, ultimately, it refers to anyone who's seen emptiness directly. So as you're walking around New York City, and you're thinking of Dremba, you're trying to recollect your final goal, your ultimate goal. Basically, see if you see any theme here, okay? You're thinking of the ultimate emptiness of a Buddha. You're thinking about the direct perception of emptiness. And you're thinking about all those people who have seen emptiness directly, okay? All right, and the Geshe Dronlunpa is very adamant about it. He says, the theme is emptiness. And you have to be thinking about it as you walk around. When you think about, I want to become a Sangha jewel, I would want to become a Buddha jewel. That's what you're doing. As you walk around New York, he says, have some kind of Dremba. That's the ultimate Dremba, okay? That's called the Nyerwarashakpa. Like, Dremba Nyerwarashak means close recollection. Now there's one which is not ultimate, all right? There's another kind of Dremba. And Master Shantideva gets into that. That kind of Dremba is you're choosing your virtuous activity for the day, and you Dremba it all day long. You keep it in the back of your mind all day long, okay? And later on, you'll see in the verses, he says, get in the habit of making it specific. You know, go after one. In these classes or in general in Buddhism, there are tens of thousands of virtuous practices. You will learn thousands and thousands of virtuous practices. And I think he has an instruction later on. He says, pick one and stick to it until you get pretty good at it. He's very adamant about it. And I think this particular class tonight is maybe the most useful one for us, for people in New York City. You know, he says, pick one practice. You have hundreds at your disposal already. Okay, for example, you could be doing Tonglen, giving and taking on your breath. You could be practicing any of the six perfections. You could be practicing any of the things you learned in Lojong in Rinpoche's class. You know, you could be practicing hundreds and hundreds of things. And I think the habit of Americans especially, and including myself, is that you have so many instructions and so many Dharma teachings that you kind of don't practice any of them. You know, you just get overwhelmed. You know, you learn 30 ways to do purification, 10 ways to do it. You know, you learn all this stuff. And in practice, you only have an hour or two today of day, during each day to practice in meditation, and you just get overwhelmed. And then people on top of that go out and get like 3 or 4 or 10 tantric initiations, and then they have all these other things to do during their 1 or 2 hours of meditation, and it turns out to be very similar to our lives. You know, the 1 or 2 hours of practice time gets to be very scattered, very broken up, very unfocused, and you don't get any result. You know, Master Shantideva says you can't do two things at once. He says it later on tonight in the text. He says you can't do two things at once. He says pick one and carry it to its end. You know, so he would say, for example, work on the perfection of giving for 6 months or something. I personally find like 1 month, 1.5 months is a good to reach the level of something that you're going to reach easily or fairly strongly, and then go on to something else. You know, drop it for a while, go on to something else. I think you need to reach a balance in your practice between going into something in depth, and then when you dry out a little bit, or you start to dry up, you become less excited by it or less creative in it, then stop it for the time being and then go to a different one. Okay, go to a different one. But you should have Dhamma. Dhamma means in the back of your mind as you walk through New York. And it's very difficult. I think New York may be the most difficult place in the world to keep Dhamma. It's very, very distracting. It's very, very difficult. And if you can do it here, you can do it anywhere. You know, keep your Dhamma. Pick a goal. Pick one of the practices you learn, and stay with it. Master Shantideva is very adamant about it. Stay with it until you get good at it, and then go on to another one. Okay, I say there's two extremes. I mean, Munchu Dhammabhadra said, if you're an intelligent person, you know, if you're sort of a creative thinking person, you will sort of dry out on something after maybe a month. You know, it'll dry out for you. You know, you do the practice of giving, you make some good progress at it, you work on it pretty hard, and then go on to another one. Then go on to another practice, okay? Like, keep it spice, what do you call it? Variety is the spice of life. But don't have variety in 1 hour in the morning of 10 different practices. It won't work. You won't be able to do it. Okay, and I think Americans have two tendencies. We either don't do our practice, or we try to do 10 practices in the morning, and then you fail either way. Either way, it doesn't work. Did you have a question?
Yes. Should you start working on practices that you're worse at?
On today or tonight, and I think if you don't have any regular practice already, Master Shantideva would say start with giving. Start with the perfection of giving. Learn about it, study it, and then make it the theme of your day. Theme of your day means Dhamma. You know, make it the theme of your day. And in the back of your mind all day long, I'm working on Dhamma. I happen to be working on jealousy right now, okay? You know, I devoted like the last week or two to jealousy, and I'm just watching very especially for jealousy all day long. You know, jealousy is the theme of my life right now. And Dhamma means I'm going to keep it in the back of my mind all day long that I'm especially sensitive to any jealousy that comes up. And that's, Dhamma means the decision of what you've chosen to concentrate on, and you don't lose it. A higher kind of Dhamma we talked about is keeping in mind the ultimate goal. You know, I would like to become an enlightened being. I would like to see emptiness directly, you know, like that. That should be always in the back of your mind, especially for Bodhisattva track, and especially after you take your vows tonight, if you take that vow, okay, that vow, I should say, to think like a Bodhisattva. So that's important in the back of your mind. That's the ultimate thing, Dhamma, in the back of your mind. But then choose a practice that's going to be the theme of your day. That's going to be something that you're concentrating on as you walk through New York. Choose one thing. Does that mean you should dump all your tantric commitments? Well, first of all, you shouldn't have taken them in the first place if you didn't have enough time to keep them. Okay? Now it's too late anyway. So what do we do? By the way, you must enter that teaching if you can. If you're ready, you must enter it. And then take one practice and concentrate on it. That's important. So what do you do? Do you just dump all your commitments? No, you can't. But you can scale them down to minimum necessary. And you're either already doing that or you drop them, okay? Don't drop them. Scale them down to something that you can handle. And then concentrate on one. You know, choose one and concentrate on it. I think since Rinpoche is teaching a special one all the time, it might be good to concentrate on that one, okay? All right. What's the difference between Jemba and Shishin? And a lot of people never get it straight, okay? Shishin is something different. Shishin is, I like to call it the mental alarm, okay? It rings the alarm. Like Jemba is supposed to be concentrating, I'm supposed to be concentrating on jealousy right now, like the last 2 weeks, okay? And then something happens called Jemba Shor. Jemba Shor in scriptural Tibetan, in colloquial Tibetan, it means to fall unconscious. You know, like if Mike Tyson punches you, you get Jemba Shor. Okay? In scriptural Tibetan, Jemba Shor means you forget the object of your focus. You forget what you're trying to concentrate on. Totally. Totally. Like you go through a whole day being jealous the whole day, and you just forgot all about it. You just, that whole concept that I will have a theme today, I will be having a certain theme, and I'm going to be watching, you just forgot it all along. In a state of meditation, the equivalent is called Jenge. Jenge means you were visualizing a Buddha 5 minutes ago, and in the last 4 minutes and 45 seconds, your boss has been there. And, you know, and then Jemba Shor. Jemba Shor means Jemba got lost. You know, Jemba, you lost the Jemba. You're not, I like to call Jemba retention sometimes, except it sounds like a bowel movement or something. You know, you're like retaining the object is Jemba. Okay, you're keeping the object in front of you. That's Jemba. Jemba Shor means the whole object has disappeared, your mind has gone onto something else, and you're not even aware of it. You know, like you have been thinking about your boss for the last 30 seconds or minute or 20 minutes, and you're just not even aware of it. Okay, how do you go from not being aware that you lost your Jemba to being aware? That's the job of Shishin. Okay, that's Shishin. So I like to call Shishin watchfulness. Shishin is a part of your mind, it says in the scripture. Surdalokpa means you keep it in the back of your mind. It's parked in the back of your mind. It's watchdog mind. It's a watchdog state of mind. And Shishin's job is to ring the alarm when Jemba loses its object. Okay? When Jemba forgets, or when Jemba loses that Buddha object, and you've been on your boss for like 10 minutes, Shishin hasn't been doing its job. Shishin's supposed to say, ring up the alarm, ding, 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 ding. Hey, you're thinking about your boss. Go back to the Buddha, okay? Assuming they're not the same, okay? It rings the alarm. It says, you are off the subject. Can you get back on the subject, please? Okay? And that's the function of Shishin. So Shishin's in the back of your mind all the time. And Shishin is reminding you that you have lost the object. Shantideva, when he gets to this point, I'm going to read you in English what Gyaltsep Je says, okay? Since you don't have any reading. Master Shantideva joins his palms at his breast and begs us in the following words. So he has this picture of Shantideva like, please, you know, he's like, please. And then he has a quotation. Those who wish to protect their minds should do whatever they can to maintain, at the cost of their lives, their recollection, Jemba, okay, which functions to prevent you from forgetting a particular virtuous object of the mind, and their watchfulness, which examines what is happening with the three doors of expression at any given time. In other words, Shishin is watching, what am I saying? What am I doing? What am I thinking? You know, it's watching those three doors. By the way, the guard, Shishin only has three doors to watch. If it was more, it might be more difficult. Like if you could talk through your ears or something, okay? Shishin only has to watch your mouth, watch your body to see what it's doing, and watch your mind, okay? Shishin is watching three things. What is this guy thinking? What is this guy doing? You know? What is this guy saying? And Shishin is standing at those three doors. They're called gosum. It's standing at the mouth, it's standing at the mind, and it's standing at the hands and the feet, and it's saying, what are these doing right now? You know, what are these guys up to? Are they doing something good or something bad? Shishin's job is that. And if Shishin sees you thinking something wrong or doing something wrong, Shishin blows the whistle. Okay, it's a whistleblower. Okay, that's Shishin's function. That's the difference between Denba and Shishin. Then Shantideva gets into very beautiful advice. And I think this is really useful for New Yorkers about how you should move through the city. You know, how should you move through the day? Shishin's function is watchfulness, is watching what you say, what you do, what you think. Okay, and he says very important at this stage in your bodhisattva career to have some kind of a, to perfect the ability to watch yourself. You know, to perfect the ability to say, what am I doing right now? What am I saying right now? What am I thinking right now? You know, it's this ability to watch yourself. And it's very difficult. You know, the easiest kind of watching, as you may have noticed, is watching what other people say or do or think, seem to think. Okay, I mean, that's the easiest one. I mean, the easiest thing is to keep track of other people's morality or other people's giving or other people's jealousness. You know, that's the easiest one. The most difficult one is to watch your own. And he said you have to perfect this ability. You have to get this ability to be very, very watchful of yourself as you go through the day. And then he's giving some clues about useful ways to do it. He says if you get too much sense stimulus, you know, if too many things are coming in, you will slip. Okay, if too much is coming in, you will lose your mindfulness, your awareness. Okay, and I mean, there's actually two choices. You can either retire to a monastery or nunnery, or to Godsto, you know, and just get away from all these things, which is one option that you have. I mean, if you're having real problems with watchfulness, you might want to consider moving to. I was in Bloomington, Indiana. There's no distractions there. Like the plane, the airport was like about as big as my room, and the plane had like six seats on it, and there was, it was pretty scary. Anyway, that's where we had the teaching this weekend. So then, you know, you can either go to a place like that, which is one option. If you really can't handle all the stimulus, then you should move it, you know, move to a place where you, there's less stimulus. But Master Shantideva goes into the methods you can use to keep your mindfulness as you walk through, if you choose to live in New York City, which I think is the most difficult city or the most difficult place I've been to keep your mindfulness, you know, to keep your awareness of what you're doing and what you're saying. So the first thing he talks about, he addresses, what should you do like you're just walking around the street? And then he has a special practice called dropping the eyes. Okay? Dropping the eyes. Where your eyes are watching. Okay? He says, if you want to get into mindfulness or watchfulness, start with your eyeballs. Okay? Watch where your eyes are going. You can learn a lot from people's eyes. You know, I don't know if you noticed, okay? You can sit at a table and learn a lot about them in a few seconds. You know, what do they look at? Where do their eyes go? You know, like shoe salesmen, their eyes are always down on the floor. People who work with diamonds are always looking at ladies' fingers. You know, what kind of diamond do they have? You know, and people who like food are always glancing at the food, you know. And you can learn a lot. You know, if you haven't noticed yet, what is it Shakespeare said, eyes are the mirror of the soul or something like that. You know, they are. You can judge who you are or how your mind is from where your eyes are going. And watch your own eyes, you know. Decide where your own eyes are going. And guard your own eyes. So the first thing Master Shantideva says is keep them down. Okay. I mean, this is a big practice for monks in Asia, and it's also important for anyone. Master Shantideva makes the point. He says, a lot of what I'm talking about was originally designed for monks, but it's good for everybody, and everybody should do it. You know. So he says, when you're walking around New York City, just keep your eyes down. You have seen everything there is to see, trust me. Okay. I mean, there isn't any store of any major significance that you have to see anymore. You've seen it all. You know, if you didn't do it yet, then, you know, take 3 days off of work and go around New York and look at everything, you know. There's nothing new in New York, you know. There really isn't anything new, and there hasn't been for a long time, you know. There's a certain number of pizza shops. You know what I look at. You know, there's a certain number of grocery stores. There's a certain number of coffee shops. There's a certain number of this or that. And it starts to repeat itself after a while. I mean, there's nothing new in New York City. There's no big reason to be looking around as you go, as you walk around New York City. Okay, there's no real burning need for a Buddhist to look at all those windows and all those things that are going on and all the activities that people are doing. It's just there's no benefit. It will crowd up your mind and you will lose your Dhamma. And then when it's time to meditate or it's time to do something, you won't be able to do it. And if you have a theme going in your mind like jealousy, I'm going to watch my jealousy. These things disturb your Dhamma. You know, they disturb you from thinking about your ultimate goal also. You know, if you don't keep your eyes down, if you don't control your eyeballs as you go around New York, those other things will overcome you. You know, they will fill up your mind. The things that you see fill up your mind. It's the same with like sounds. I used to be a musician, so you know, if I just sit in a laundromat and I hear these songs, and then I go home, it's like I can't meditate for a day or something. You know, you have to watch the level of sense stimulus that you allow to come into your mind. And that's the idea. That's what he's talking about. So generally, he says, keep your eyes down and don't be looking at all these things. You will forget within 2 days everything you saw. So what's the use of it? You know, it's the same with the New York Times, especially the Sunday Times, okay? You know, you cannot remember a week later. I'll bet you $100 you can't remember 3 weeks later 1% of what you read in the Sunday Times that you spent 3 or 4 hours to read, it's useless. It just goes away. You know, you can, trust me, you can find out the headlines 2 ways. Stop at one of those pay things and look in it and just figure out if anyone new has an atom bomb or anything else important that you should know. And then, or you can look over people's shoulders in the subway. And that's enough. You'll learn everything that's burning to know. Everything that you need to know, you'll learn that way. You don't have to buy it. You'll save a lot of money, too. You don't have to buy the newspaper. You won't remember what's in there a week later. So what's the use of looking at it? He's saying your eye real estate is very precious. Human eyeballs are very rare, and they don't last very long. And use them for something important. So he says, keep your eyes down. Don't get too much stimulus. I think this is most difficult to practice in New York. And I think also it's of most benefit to New Yorkers. You know, if you can limit the stimulus coming in as you walk around, you can be a better Buddhist, you know. And it's difficult to do, but if you pull it off, it's of great benefit when you're living in this city. Because then you'll be able to concentrate on something. You'll learn the art of concentrating on something. And keeping your mind on something. That's Dhamma, okay? Second thing he says, also, if your homework said something like, give the 4 great divisions of the eye practice, okay? First one is just general advice on how to keep your eyes, and that's down. Okay, as you move to the city, keep them down. Okay. Second one, he says, what should you do if you get tired? Like, your mind is just getting kind of dull from being down. You know, the cracks in the sidewalk can be very boring after a while. Okay? There's some sidewalks that are really great. I'll tell you one. It's on 45th Street and 6th. And they have these little diamonds in the sidewalk, you know, and they glitter. And stuff like that. And then the sidewalk near NYU has Pepsi out of Burma things written all over. And, you know, you get to know all the sidewalks. And he says if you get bored, you know, if it gets too much to be staring at the sidewalk all the time, then he says look up and refresh yourself, you know, with the idea that I am refreshing myself, you know. You know, I'm going to look at these trees and all these people and what they're doing and, you know, just with the idea of refreshing your mind, okay. The third practice that he mentions with the eyeball practice is what to do if you bump into somebody that you know. I mean, someone comes up to you and says, hey, how you been? You know, I didn't see you since your old days at Andean, you know. And he says, look at them and be normal. He says, you know, just say, smile and say, how are you? You're good to see you, you know. You know, he says, you don't have to, like, look at their feet or anything, you know. He's very clear. He says, look up at them, say, you know, engage in a nice conversation, and then go on your way. Okay, but he doesn't say, like, ignore people or something like that. Then he says, what should you do when you finish resting your mind? You know, you've been looking at the cracks too long in the sidewalk. You look around, and then he says, go back to looking at the sidewalk. But he says, take the opportunity to see if you're walking into a pole or if there's any muggers around. You know, he says, it's okay under special conditions, you know. Like you're crossing the street, you better look, you know. And like that. So he says, take the time.